I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about childhood obesity and an initiative designed to make children healthier and happier, Jump In for Healthy Kids. We'll talk about simple ways young people can make exercise, good nutrition, and other healthy habits a part of their lives. My guests will be CEO Ron Gifford, Jeff Sparing, President and CEO of Riley Hospital for Children at Indiana University Health, and Dave Miner, the chair of the Indie Hunger Network. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits at WFYI.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about childhood obesity in Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by giving us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, my guests are starting with this is at least the third time, right, Ron? You've been on the show. Ron Gifford, who is the CEO of Jump In for Healthy Kids. Ron, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, John. Great to be here.
And we have two first-timers, Jeff Sparing, who is President and CEO of Riley Hospital for Children at Indiana University Health, and Dave Miner, the chair of the Indie Hunger Network. Jeff, Dave, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
It's good to have you both here. Well, Ron, I'm going to start. First, tell us what Jump In for Healthy Kids is.
So Jump In for Healthy Kids is a campaign to improve children's health here in central Indiana. Here's the problem. There are about 175,000 kids in central Indiana who are at significantly higher risk for preventable diseases like diabetes, heart disease, stroke, cancer, because they're not at healthy weights. And so Jump In is a community-wide initiative that's bringing together organizations and initiatives from all over central Indiana to work together in an aligned way to try to give our kids a chance to make healthy choices about what they eat, how they play, where they're able to access good nutritious foods, where they can go out and engage in physical activity, be active, burn off that energy. Bring all of that together in a very focused manner so that as a community, as the adults in their lives, we can give them all of the opportunity possible so that they can live healthy lives and not have to suffer the consequences of being at an unhealthy weight.
And, Jeff, I'm going to take it. Give me some idea of the scope of this problem. We've heard 175,000. Where does Indiana stack up compared to the rest of the nation?
Yeah, so unfortunately, this is a big problem for Indiana. We're at the lower end of the states in this regard. So it's a huge issue that we have seen for a while. But as Ron mentioned, you know, we worry even more about the trend and where we see this going if we don't, as a community, as a state, start to get around this and really start to make a difference.
What do you see? I mean, obviously at the medical care level, I mean, what kind of stresses is this creating on the system for you? Are you seeing more and more patients having serious health problems earlier because of this?
Absolutely. I think that's the most striking thing for those of us that, you know, trained especially in pediatrics. So as a pediatrician, I went to medical school 20 years ago. I never in any of my classes in pediatrics tried to learn about, do you need to start a 5-year-old on cholesterol medication, or what happens, you know, when an 11-year-old already has joint issues because of, you know, prolonged years of extra weight. So unfortunately, as Ron mentioned, we're seeing these things much earlier in kids. And again, for us, this is about lifelong impact of health. So if we're already experiencing those things, you know, in young children, we know what some of those diseases like diabetes can do over a 20 or 30 year period if an adult develops type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm. What happens if you have that over 50 or 60 years? What are the consequences of that? And so it's a huge thing. It's happening very quickly. And then again, for us, we're seeing it in much younger ages. And that's the thing that really worries us.
And Dave, what accounts for this? I mean, you know, how much of this is nutrition?
Yeah, one of the contributing factors is we have an awful lot of people who are in food insecure households, including kids, of course. And the level of food assistance being provided today is staggering. It's over 200 million meals in Marion County alone in the course of the year.
Is that annually?
Annually.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's just a lot of people that are sitting on the edge. And it's tough to eat a balanced diet if you don't have enough resources for food.
Now, I'm going to ask all three of you to kind of join in on this because I remember, you know, I'm of a certain vintage here when, you know, we as children ate Wonder Bread, you know, and thought nothing of eating all sorts of not particularly healthy stuff. Why is it a bigger problem now than it would have been 30, 40, 50 years ago?
Well, you know, John, the reality is that even though we might have eaten a few things like that, for the most part, what we ate 30 years ago was very healthy. A lot of vegetables, fruits, and the like. Food was not highly processed like it is today.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talk about this sometimes as the unintended conspiracy of the culture against our kids. 20 years ago, we didn't talk about childhood obesity because although there were kids who had weight issues, it wasn't epidemic. What's happened in 20 years? A series of things. First of all, the way our food is made, the way it's processed, what's in the food itself is entirely different today. Think about high fructose corn syrup as one example of an additive that's in almost everything that that we eat, it seems. That wasn't the case before. Portion sizes are significantly larger. So it's not just what we eat, it's how we eat. And more often than not, we tend to eat it in our cars as we're driving through. And that's one of the other challenges, of course, is that kids don't have as much time outside. When we were kids, I'm sure if your mom was like mine, we got kicked out the front door early in the morning and were told not to come back until it was dinner time.
If then.
If then, right. Now, of course, in some neighborhoods, it's a challenge for kids to get out and play because there aren't playgrounds, there aren't sidewalks. It may not be safe because of traffic or because of other issues in the neighborhood. If most kids are like my teenage daughters, they love to spend time in front of screens and tablets and phones and the like.
I'm glad you brought that up because that is an issue I know we would get calls about. I mean, it is part of the problem. Relating to that, they don't get outside. They don't get the kinds of exercise that the previous generations, but they've got, you know, the fittest thumbs in you know, human history.
Right. So schools, we used to have PE classes every day, it seemed, because of pressures that schools face now as it relates to academic achievement and the need to put resources there. They've cut back on PE classes. There aren't as many intramural programs and the like. Any one of those things in isolation may not have created the kind of issue we see today. But you put all of those things together, it really is kind of this conspiracy against our kids. And so that's why this community-wide initiative has to focus on all of those issues. We have to address this in a very comprehensive fashion.
And talk to me a little bit about who is involved in that community-wide initiative. Who are the players?
Yeah, so two of the players are here with me today. Riley Hospital, the Indy Hunger Network. We have on our leadership council 29 members that represent the business community, the nonprofit sector, so United Way, the YMCA, other nonprofits, the Indiana Minority Health Coalition, La Plaza. We have all of the hospital systems at the table. We have education, Superintendent Glenda Ritz, Dr. Farabee from IPS. We have really every sector in the community represented at the leadership council level. And then at the working group or task force level, we've expanded even more broadly into the community with other organizations. So Dave here on behalf of the Hunger Network really speaks to that nutrition component as it relates to the community side. There's a school-based nutrition component as well. And then one of the things that Riley Hospital is sponsoring with Andrew Luck is the Change the Play initiative that I'm sure Jeff will talk about, which really gets to the point of kids getting out and being more active and taking control of their own destiny, their own lives in terms of making those healthy choices.
We are talking about childhood obesity in Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, before we get into sort of solutions to this problem, I'd like to define the scope. You know, you'd mentioned, Jeff, that you know, when you were in medical school, nobody was telling you, okay, you know, what should I think about when I want to put a 5-year-old on cholesterol medication? Are you seeing, you know, joints break down in an 11-year-old? Could you talk a little bit about, you know, how we're trying, since obviously we've got a generation right now that already has felt the effect of this, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen the damage. What has that done? Are there solutions for those folks? And what did it do to that 11-year-old? What did it do to that 5-year-old?
Yeah, no, and I think that's exactly why, you know, this is a multi-generational issue. As Ron mentioned, you know, so much of our focus now is let's find the generation where they're at a point that we can intervene and make a difference. But the reality is if we can intervene with those young children and help them make better choices, it's amazing what effects that can have on parents. And none of us as parents are too late to also be making these choices and these decisions as well. And so, you know, we clearly already see this in our adult population. We've seen what obesity can cause with all the increase in type 2 diabetes, the healthcare costs, the associated complications from that. So for us now, it's how do we impact another generation so that they don't duplicate that same process that we're seeing their parents go through? And then the hope, of course, is that as they do that, we can then solve this for the later generations to come.
And Dave, you've made the point that in a lot of places that are food distressed, I mean, we've done shows here on food deserts, we've done shows on, you know, on just the whole idea of not so much food deserts, but I'm trying to think of a lesson, you know, a lack of food knowledge of the assumptions that, you know, that some parents might have that they're providing healthy choices for their kids when they in fact may not be doing so. What, you know, what are some of the solutions here? Because for some of those parents, particularly if you live in a food desert, you don't have adequate transportation, you don't have a way to get someplace where you can get good food, you know, their options are limited. They could be listening to this and think, right, okay, yeah, I care, I want to do this, but tell me how.
Yeah, and there's a sort of a multi-pronged attack going on this, a whole variety of things. You know, garden on the go, taking food out, fresh food out, Gleaners Food Bank providing healthy, nutritious food to kids to take home with them on the weekends, Second Helpings doubling their output to Boys and Girls Clubs. The network itself has set up a gleaning capability for the city to get fresh food straight from the farms to food pantries. The Indy Food Council actually is looking at ways. So a whole variety of things, and we really need all of them, actually, if we're going to get where we want to go. And the last one, and we can talk about this in a little bit, can we ramp up nutrition education and cooking education?
And that is a good point. We are talking about childhood obesity in Indiana here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. And Dave, that point, ramping it up, because it strikes me that all of those solutions, worthwhile as they might be, aren't necessarily going to meet the challenge of what you said, 200 million
right.
meals
right.
that have to be, you know, that is a truly tall order. Is it possible to do that without some sort of significant government intervention?
Well, the government plays a very significant role in food assistance. Over 90% of food is provided through SNAP, number one, mm-hmm. school meals, number two, WIC, Women, Infants, and Children Program, number three, and then senior programs and more. And about 10% is private.
And I guess I should have reframed that. Without, in terms of government, reforming those sort of government programs, because one would presume that if we have the problem, the current approach isn't necessarily working.
We're meeting most of the need, I would say. And the network's actually in the process of trying to determine exactly how much need remains, because our objective is to have enough for all. But there are certainly opportunities for improvement, and those can go in both ways. There was a provision of where SNAP was increased, food stamps SNAP was increased After the recession started, that provision expired in November of last year. That one provision took 11 million meals out of Marion County.
11 million meals?
11 million meals. So this can go both directions. 11 million meals, by the way, is how much Gleaners puts out in a year. It's a huge number. So.
Oh, wow. We are talking about childhood obesity in Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Twitter at WFYI or on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. My guests are Ron Gifford, who is the CEO of Jump In for Healthy Kids, Jeff Sparing, President and CEO of Riley Hospital for Children at Indiana University Health, and Dave Miner, the chair of the Indie Hunger Network. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about childhood obesity in Indiana. My guests are Ron Gifford, CEO of Jump In for Healthy Kids. That's an initiative to combat childhood obesity. Jeff Sparing, president and CEO of Riley Hospital for Children at Indiana University Health, and Dave Miner, the chair of the Indy Hunger Network. Probably also should point out the Jump In. It's capital I, capital N, too. It's a reference to Indiana.
That's correct.
As well. We were talking just before we went to the break about, you know, the strategies of trying to get healthier food choices and options to disadvantaged children, disadvantaged families in particular. And actually, during the break, we were talking a little bit about what hasn't worked in some places. Ron, could you talk about some of the failed strategies, the things we know don't work?
Sure, absolutely. One of the things we've done is looked at strategies that have been successful elsewhere, and we're trying to replicate those. And we're trying to learn from those strategies that haven't been so successful. So some communities have simply have tried to address the issue of food access or food insecurity by simply saying, okay, we just need to deliver more fruits and vegetables into neighborhood mini-marts or things like that. But as Dave was mentioning earlier, if there isn't an education component that goes with that, say cooking classes and the like, those strategies failed. What happened is the merchants just found themselves with rotting vegetables. And I'll use myself as an example here. Somebody gave me an eggplant and told me to feed my teenage daughters with it. I don't know how I'd prepare it, right? Yeah. So they would eat it. A friend of mine said we should fry it and put Velveeta on it, but I don't think
that doesn't work. Right?
Yeah, Dr. Spearing says that doesn't work. So you have to marry these ideas. So it's not just about food availability, but it's also knowing how to incorporate that into menus and the like. And so that's where, you know, one of the things we've been in conversation with local churches and houses of worship. You know, a lot of urban churches have kitchens, and a lot of them have older parishioners because this does tend to be generational in terms of who knows how to cook or not. And so can you use the local church or house of worship as a place in the community where you can bring Garden on the Go or other programs too, so that the fresh fruits, vegetables, et cetera, are delivered? And then you can also use that as a place where you have cooking classes, tasting classes. You can have some intergenerational, say the older women who know how to cook can teach those of us who don't know how to cook how to do that. So those are strategies that elsewhere have been fairly effective.
How much of this, I mean, we've talked about how there has to be better nutritional education in schools. And Ron, I think both you and Jeff mentioned the absence now in many schools of phys ed, of, you know, exercise components. How much of this is about sort of reforming some of the education reform movement that was driven to the kind of back to basics? We're going to focus really heavily on the science and the math and some communication skills, and realizing no, we also have to teach some of these other basic life skills that you have to take care of your body. You just have to. You have to know what to put in it, and you have to know what you do to maintain keep the parts working. Jeff, I'll start with you, but I'm going to let all of you have a crack at that.
Sure. No, I think that's an important part of it, and that, you know, we know that some of the programs that we have been looking at and coordinating, and again, Riley's Change the Play program with Andrew Luck, I know there have been a lot of people that have said, so what can we help the schools with to give them, if it isn't going to be a formal PE class, if they don't have time to do that, what are ways to get kids active in school to help teach them to do that? I think the flip for us, though, is we have to be mindful as we think about educational goals and success for kids long term. There have been plenty of studies that have shown that actually kids that don't have good physical activity and aren't healthy actually have poor academic outcomes, regardless of what kind of classes we teach. And so one of the things that we are very open in our discussion around is, honestly, if we don't put some priority into activity and wellness, actually kids don't pay attention in school. They don't focus as well. We know that their long-term academic achievement isn't as good. And so as much as the priority is going to be around getting good outcomes academically for kids, part of that, you know, part of that is going to have to involve this type of stuff.
That it's going to take a more long-term sort of approach. Dave?
Yeah, I was just going to add, Gleaners, for example, has food pantries in 20 schools in Marion County, and they even do a nutrition club on Fridays for many of those, so that while the kids are getting food, they're also getting information. Again, I think a multi-pronged approach.
Ron?
Well, one way that has worked in places like Mississippi, they've incorporated 5 minutes per class period of physical activity, and they actually build it into the curriculum. So if you're doing math, the teacher will give a problem, 5 + 3 = and the kids will do 8 jumping jacks. Or they'll walk around the classroom in English class acting out perhaps a portion of a book that they're reading. Very clever curriculum appropriate strategies that get the kids out of their seats and moving. And the research shows that, one, it actually, brain research demonstrates that it lights up your brain, makes you more receptive to learning. Teachers report anecdotally that if the kids are able to burn off some energy, they pay more attention, like Jeff pointed out. And then the more formal research demonstrates that relationship between fitness levels and academic achievement. So in Mississippi, where they have a very significant obesity problem amongst their kids, they've begun implementing these strategies, and they're seeing reductions in their rates, and they're seeing this correlation, this improvement in academic achievement as the kids get healthier.
We are talking about childhood obesity in Indiana. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, we've done a pretty good job of talking about the damage it does to the kids. What does it do to the community? I mean, is this one of those things where, you know, part of the argument, for example, on banning smoking was the damage it did both to the civic life and also ultimately to business costs and all of that sort of stuff. I'm assuming, given the kind of health effects that Jeff is talking about in regard to, you know, what it means to see a 5-year-old on cholesterol meds, that there has to be some lasting impact to what it's doing to our community and economic life here. Ron?
Well, the health costs are astronomical, and these are all preventable diseases. That's why it's so important that we take these steps and that as a community we get behind this and we try to help address this issue, because we're talking about preventable diseases and the costs associated with them. So the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, recently issued a statement that said, unless things change, they predict that 40% of the kids born between the beginning of this century and now, so 40% of those kids will develop diabetes in their lifetime. Mm. And when you think about the costs associated with that, both in terms of treatment and lost productivity and lost quality of life, that's what makes this a community issue. So you have before you the opportunity, by making some changes that are, they're hard to implement because of everything we've just talked about, but it's not impossible to do. If we're able to do that, the benefits in terms of quality of life and then the economic benefits for the individuals as well as for their families and the community at large are immense.
Jeff, what about the stresses really on sort of the whole medical health profession sector of the economy, because obviously that's a huge national debate we're having on
that.
How do we pay to take care of ourselves by and large, you know, whose responsibility ultimately should it be? I would think, you know, we've had all of the ethical challenges of the back end of life. What do we do with being able to prolong and extend life? I would think this would create a whole new set of challenges because you don't anticipate having really, really widespread, you know, 40% of the population being somewhat at risk on the front end.
That's exactly right. And as Ron said, if you think about type 2 diabetes, we know, I mean, long-term consequences having that over a couple of decades, kidney disease, eye issues, all of those things, as we said earlier. Now take that and put that over 40, 50, 60 years. What does that mean? And so, you know, we already see the direct health impact, you know, missed work for moms and dads having to bring their kids in more frequently because they have all of these ailments that are related to their obesity. We have no idea what the long-term healthcare costs of over a lifetime are for them. And then again, as moms and dads are missing work and then these kids going forward, you know, we know it affects their academic achievement, their ability to concentrate and focus in school. We know that this is going to be many days of work that are off for them over time. So as you said, this is a comprehensive problem that is beyond just the direct healthcare cost. It's a societal cost that we will all have to assume and figure out how to cover in a way that we've never had to do before.
We are talking about childhood obesity here in Indiana. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. Mary Ann, welcome to the program. Marion, welcome to the program.
Yes, hello?
Hello, what's on your mind?
Can you hear me? I'm sorry. I'm a advocate for the Earth and the Animals here in Rochdale, Indiana, and I have a couple of questions. I'm a retired nurse, and I would like to know what you're teaching the children about our modern farming practices. Because we're finding here in rural Indiana that the 1% claiming to raise food for our children are actually desecrating our land with modern farming methods, where Rochdale is now a food desert. And I'm wondering if you're teaching the children about what you're teaching about genetically modified food and also about going cruelty-free. I mean, all our animals are now factory-farmed in confined animal feeding operations, and this is done by the people that were putting corn syrup in our food, where these crops go for ethanol, they go for livestock feed, and we're desecrating our land. And I so much appreciate what you're doing, but it's like we need the Farm Bureau behind us. We need the, but they're not protecting farmers. They're protect, or the food supply. I mean, I was a nurse, and even the healthcare system. I mean, I knew in the 80s that a high-fat, low-fiber diet would prevent a colonoscopy. And yet I'm 67 years old, and I've been a vegan for 30 years, and I go to the doctor, all we talk about is why I should get a colonoscopy. Mm-hmm. It's like he wants to sell me a colonoscopy, or, you know, they're still making money if he keeps us sick. So, thank you.
Oh, and certainly. Thank you for the call, Marianne. I'm going to let Dave take a crack at the first answer. Thank you.
Well, I think it's an interesting challenge because productivity of production is really, really important, right? We've been talking about low-income folks who have trouble accessing the nutrition they require. Being able to produce food, which is very healthy, but also economical, is critical. And there's a bunch of trade-offs in there to be had.
Well, and I guess the part of that too, is one would assume that with this problem, we are consuming all sorts of foods that we should not be consuming right now, and that somebody is selling those foods along the way, that there is a profit motive to some degree in doing this. So how do we attack that piece of it? I'm going to start with Jeff on this one. What sort of, if you are a relatively new parent and you're trying to get started and get your child on a healthy path, what are some good ways, what's a good basic diet for that child?
Yeah, so again, I think as always, even from the very beginning, what we talk about is for kids, making sure that you're giving them variety, that, you know, obviously, you know, emphasizing fruits and vegetables and talking with their child health provider, pediatrician, family medicine provider on the right ages to start to introduce this. But this is something you can't start too early. You know, I spent a lot of time with moms of 4-month-old and 6-month-olds that, you know, well, I tried to give them green beans and they didn't like it, so I never went back to do it. And just like all of us, you know, even as infants and growing up, having a variety, having a lot of exposure to things, it's amazing how well you can do with that. Again, being good role models. But I really think it starts with making sure that you're emphasizing the right types of foods, fruits and vegetables, helping them to understand, you know, the different ways to do it. I think the caller's point is a good one, though. I think that, you know, as we continue to educate people to be more aware of food practices and processes, as Ron mentioned, we eat a lot of processed food now. And so helping, you know, moms and dads to understand the differences between vegetables, between organic, non-organic, some of those things, I think there is a part of that to that.
Well, and there's a lot. I know we've done shows on food deserts and really the whole idea of the local or slow food movement as opposed to fast food. Is it really sort of re-educating ourselves as to what we should eat?
So what's interesting, John, a lot of kids don't know where vegetables come from.
No.
So a lot of schools have begun planting gardens,
yeah,
or they're partnering with urban gardens here in Marion County. And we hear the stories of little kids who are amazed to find out that carrots come out of the ground.
Uh-huh.
Day Nursery has this great little garden in its backyard at one of its facilities, and the kids were growing strawberries, which was fascinating for them. And then when the strawberries were ripe, they picked them, brought them in, washed them, cut them up, ate them. And this is how...
Oh, that's, you know, how that works.
So this is... Yeah, right. They don't always come out of a bag in the freezer section. So this is how, just one way with little preschoolers, you can start to educate them about good nutrition by helping them understand where food comes from. Even with little kids who you ask, how can we teach them about good nutrition? One strategy is to teach them to eat the rainbow. We've learned it. So you just eat a fruit that's a color, you know, each of the colors of the rainbow,
mm-hmm,
you're going to get nutritious foods, you know, because most processed foods, well, maybe I shouldn't say that. There are a lot of processed foods with a lot of weird colors in them. But if you eat blueberries and green beans and carrots and oranges,
yeah, my
and
son would
like
say,
that,
oh, great, I've had a bag of Skittles, I'm good. I'm sorry. I did not mean to knock your point down. Yeah.
But it makes the point, doesn't it? This is the challenge we have. Slurpees come in every color, I think.
Yeah. And I think we've heard multiple, you know, different groups that have said part of the fun of these initiatives are kids actually will learn about a vegetable that they never do, you know, never seen before, go home and show their parents or talk to their parents about how they prepared it, and actually are teaching their parents sometimes about how to prepare vegetables that the family had never done.
We heard a story of a daycare center got a phone call from one of the parents wanting to know what this asparagus thing was that their kid ate at lunch, because the kid was wondering why they couldn't have asparagus.
They wanted asparagus, exactly.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, Dave?
Well, I was just going to say our kids came home and asked us about recycling, and we're still recycling, you know, 25 years later. So, yeah, the kids can really be influential.
And how it transforms. The other part, I thought, of what Marion was talking about, too, was, you know, how much of this can't just be done at the consumer point. It has to be done on the production end as well. And maybe look at some. Dave, you're the one sort of nodding your head back and forth. I mean, how viable is that?
Well, it's a long, slow process. I'm thinking of the work of the Indy Food Council and trying to have more locally grown fruits and vegetables. And we sort of stripped all that out over a long period of time. It's going to take a long time to put it back in. You know, I forget the exact number, 95-96% of our food is imported in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
To build all the infrastructure, to change practices, that's going to be a long haul. The good news is that food businesses are very responsive to their customers. And so if people ask for something, they're going to provide it. Now, whether we have enough people asking, that's an interesting question.
And I want to talk a little bit also about the profile. Do we see this more in boys or in girls? Jeff?
Multifactorial. So differences in different societies and different communities. I think that's the other part that we are learning very clearly is that there's not going to be one solution for each even subset of the community, different neighborhoods. We see different patterns, food patterns, access, activities, as Ron mentioned, are the neighborhoods safe? So sometimes it's boys and girls, sometimes it's just different subsets of the community. So for us, it's going to be thinking about what are the solutions that each individual community is going to need to be able to do this, because it's not as clear as just one gender or the other.
We are talking about childhood obesity here in Indiana. My guests are Ron Gifford, CEO of Jump In for Healthy Kids, Jeff Sparing, President and CEO of the Riley Hospital for Children at Indiana University Health, and Dave Miner, the chair of the Indy Hunger Network. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about childhood obesity in Indiana. My guests are Ron Gifford, who is the CEO of Jump In for Healthy Kids, Jeff Sparing, president and CEO of Riley Hospital for Children at Indiana University Health, and Dave Miner, the chair of the Indy Hunger Network. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. Catherine, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. My question was, I've been listening and I hear that we're teaching our kids about what foods are good to put in our bodies and what foods not so much. But then what about how much food we put into our body? What is being done about that? Because I've seen, I'm a nanny when I'm not in school, and what I've seen parents giving their kids like 7 or 8 times the amount that, you know, a child should actually put into their body. So what can be done about that?
Thanks very much for calling the question. It's a good one, Catherine. Jeff.
Yeah, so I think, again, it's an interesting thing about, you know, portion size, portion control, where we're at. We clearly have gone, you know, too far compared to what we think is ideal for kids and ourselves as adults. But again, I think what's interesting is you talk to kids and help them understand is the more of the fruits and vegetables that they eat, that whole issue actually starts to go away. In fact, you could tell a kid to eat as many fruits and vegetables, whatever size or quantity they want, and actually have great health outcomes. So it really comes down to it's the portion size of what part of their diet, you know, that we need to actually look at and make sure that we're not getting out of balance with those things.
And does that complicate the task too? I mean, we have been focusing mostly on the quality of the food. That whole idea of telling young people in particular who have no sense of proportion. We were talking at the break. I've got my son, you know, plays 3 sports and is not the healthiest eater in the world. I'm a type 2 diabetic. There's a history of it in the family, telling him, you got to start worrying about this. This, you know, it likely will be a challenge for you at some point in your life. And he says, well, I've got no excess weight. Well, he's playing 3 sports. He's working out 20 hours a week. Most likely he's not going to run.
The whole issue is complicated in a lot of ways. You know, the sad reality is it used to be that we didn't have to teach kids how to make healthy choices about what they ate and how they played. We didn't have to teach them how to make smart choices because the default choice tended to be the smart choice. It tended to be the healthy. What we ate tended to be a lot healthier, the opportunities to go out and play. But we live in the world we live in, and so now what we have to do is arm our kids with the ability to make those smart choices, give them the opportunity, give them the options, and, you know, create those spaces for them to get out and get involved. Andrew Lux Changed the Play program that Riley is partnering with him on is a great example of that, because in a really fun way with, you know, a great role model, kids learn how to make these kinds of choices in a very interactive fashion, and these are the kinds of programs that we just have to wrap our arms around and make sure that there are a lot of in the community.
Jeff, we ought to talk. We've made reference to the Change the Play. We ought to talk about what it is.
Sure. So this was a program that we initiated with Andrew when he first came to Indianapolis, and it was really out of Riley's desire. I think everyone knows Riley as a nationally ranked children's hospital that you go to if your child gets sick, and I think what we had not emphasized is we were really about actually helping kids stay well.
Mm-hmm.
And so with him in partnership, we created this web-based interactive program called Change the Play. It's an eight-week program that there are eight challenges, one challenge per week for 8 weeks. We launched in 2013. We did a pilot in schools this past spring, and now are going into season two starting September 8th. And so it is Andrew's program. You go online to iuhealth.org/changetheplay, and you can register. Andrew greets you with a video, and then every week introduces you to a new challenge. We're rolling it out to families at home and then also to all of the schools in the state of Indiana this year for the first time. It really is a way for kids to engage, to learn, but to also become leaders for their families. And part of the challenges are get your mom or dad to try a new vegetable that they've never tried before. Bring a friend over and have them try a new activity that they've never done before. Again, really trying to create, as best as you can, some sort of a movement that really centers around kids to help them become the leaders, because we know if we can impact them and have them be the one that leads it, we can fix this for generations.
We are talking about childhood obesity in Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what Julia's done and give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Julia, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. What's on your mind?
Well, I've raised two children who are excellent adults now, but I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew that in the state of Indiana, it's very difficult to get in sports in any school system. It's very highly competitive. My children were not allowed. They just didn't have the skill set. And I remember growing up, when I was in even intramural sports, I was chosen last every time. I was not allowed to play because I just didn't have skill set. So, but it taught me to be active. Why should we have to pay, for an extra program after school when the schools should include? They should be very inclusive. And also, I also had a comment. I was on welfare when I was raising my daughter, and on the food stamps, fresh fruits and vegetables are very expensive, very outrageously expensive, and the packaged foods are cheap, and we can get a lot of those on food stamps. So the solution is very difficult, I understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for the call and the question, Julia. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Well, Dave, I'm going to throw that one first, the packaged food versus the fresh stuff.
And I was one of those kids who got picked last, too. I certainly kind of remember that. But I did want to point out we have launched something called Fresh Bucks, which has been done in other places. But you can now go to a farmer's market around the city and take your SNAP card in and get twice the value of vegetables from the farmer's market. Again, it's a small step but an important one, both in the food and in the education that goes with that. And we're hoping over time to spread that across Indiana.
Do we need to restructure? I mean, the other part, her first point there seemed to sort of challenge even the premise of school athletics, that you know, rather than being the showplace, you know, systems of competition, they should be part of the educational curriculum and much more inclusive. Jeff, you seem to be nodding your head.
Yeah, no, and I think that's part of it. I think, you know, organized sports is great, but one of the things that I think we want to make sure that everyone understands, this is about activity. And
yeah,
in any way that a kid enjoys it or wants to define it, and again, not to keep going back, but, you know, the one of the things that was most interesting about Andrew when we did the program with him is he didn't play a lot of truly organized sports. One of the things when he does this challenge, it's really about going out with his family and just playing out in the front yard or going for a hike or things like that. And so I think, you know, we don't want this to be about the only way to get activity is to go join a sports team. We all got activities in all kinds of different ways growing up, and kids have those same kinds of opportunities today. In fact, that's the fun challenge, is to get them to be active in a completely different way that doesn't involve having to go out and buy equipment or go be a part of an organized activity.
Take a walk around the neighborhood.
Absolutely.
Or whatever. Run.
Right. Take a walk around the neighborhood or dance with your friends. So the kinds of things that, again, you might do after school, at the school and the like, are those kinds of games. So we have almost pigeonholed activity to be the equivalent of sport, that now you think about, well, I need to get active. I need to get up. I need to go to the gym, as mm-hmm. opposed to taking a walk around the block or you know, running around the backyard with your dog or the kids next door or things like that. So helping our kids understand, part of it's a mindset that being active, as Jeff said, is not the same thing as putting on shoulder pads and, you know, doing
and risking
suicides.
Your joints in another
yeah,
way.
Exactly. Yeah.
We are talking about childhood obesity here in Indiana. Lee, welcome to the program.
Hi,
what's on your mind?
My call.
Certainly.
I know you're talking about food for children, mm-hmm. but also for adults, too. We need to read labels. I thought I had cut back on my fats, but, you know, at one time butter was bad for you to use margarine. And I kind of went overboard with the margarine, and I happened to notice the ingredients. And two of them are palm oil and palm kernel oil. Those aren't good for your heart, are they?
No, we'll let the doctor answer that one.
So there are a couple of different oils that are better. I think your point is a great one. Unfortunately, sometimes we've been kind of, because of marketing, you see something that's low fat. Well, sometimes low fat means high sugar or vice versa. And so being able to understand the differences. Clearly, there are some oils that are better than others, and we try to educate folks on the right ones. Palm oil is a specific one right now. It's kind of interesting, especially with our orangutan friends here at the zoo and some of the issues going on with that. But it is something that we do try to make sure that the point is great. It's important for adults to be able to understand labels and understand these nutrition facts as much as it is with kids.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Lee. Well, we're talking about childhood obesity here on No Limits. John, welcome to the program.
Yeah. Hi. I was just curious whether you had any thoughts on breastfed versus formula fed and the rates of childhood obesity associated with either one, and also on the onset of food choices for infants. For example, if you start with rice cereals versus a more complex vegetable, sweet potato, peas. Our personal note is that we have a 10 times rule, which we let our 2.5-year-old try something 10 times. And if she rejects it all 10 times, then we say she doesn't like it. And mm-hmm. we've never gotten past 6. So I'm just curious your thoughts on the introduction of breastfed.
Great. Thank you very much for the call and the question, John. Jeff, these all seem to be coming to you.
No, that's okay. So we clearly know that there are benefits to breastfeeding for the time that that a mom is capable. But in this instance, I don't think that's as key long term if you can get to making sure that kids have access to really robust and vibrant type of diet. I love the 10 times rule. Even as a pediatrician, I didn't explain it that well. But what I told families is if you kept going back at the same thing with a young infant with a vegetable, I've never had an infant that ended up turning down a vegetable over time. And so to the point of the caller, we clearly know that those types of eating practices early as infants make kids much better and much healthier eaters long term. So this is something that you can't start too early. The more access you give to kids, it's easier. But we also need to make sure that we can intervene at whatever point that we can. So it's a great point.
We've gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Eric who says, apropos of Julia's comments, try the Indianapolis Rowing Center. No previous skill required. No cuts, and scholarships are available. It's a great sport. There's a lot of this, and the URL is indyrowing.org. There's a lot of this thinking also just differently, I think, about what activity and exercise should constitute. Ron.
That's right. And John, having this opportunity to talk with your listeners is a great way to begin that conversation and to continue it in some instances. And in order to be successful here, we have to change the culture of health mm-hmm. in central Indiana, which requires thinking about it in different ways, thinking about food choices we make and activity choices and things like that, and encouraging others. And part of what we've been charged to do at Jump In is to be a resource of trying to understand, collect mm-hmm. these stories and resources and come up with ways to make this more readily available, this information more readily available in the community through public awareness and education campaigns and the like, working with all of the partner organizations that have interests and in many instances, some great programs out there that people just aren't aware of, like the Rowing Center, as an example, mm-hmm. and figuring out how to lift those messages up, make that information more widely available. That's, again, all goes to the point of how do you help people make healthy choices?
What, you know, I'm assuming that there are some goals for this initiative. I mean, what are we saying, at least at the first level, is going to be success? I think the number was 175,000 kids this area. Well, how many do we want to reduce that number by a?
Absolutely. Now, we're actually going to set formal goals at our Leadership Council meeting later this month.
Oh, okay.
So, sorry, John, but we're not going to break that news here today before they okay. make that choice. But
not a wise move to get out in front of your board?
usually not. But we know the goal is going to be, what we want to look at is a substantial reduction in the rate of kids who are who are at an unhealthy weight. Or said a different way, we want to increase the number of kids who are at healthy weights, mm-hmm. and we're going to set 5- and 10-year goals because this is a long-term process. The other thing we want to do is we want to have a significant goal for helping move kids toward a healthy weight.
Mm-hmm.
Being at a healthy weight is great, but as Jeff knows and as the medical research demonstrates, if you're overweight and you were able to reduce your weight by 5 to 10%, there are substantial health benefits that go along with that. Some studies say you'll reduce your risk of diabetes by 50% mm-hmm. by just that reduction. So if we can move kids who are struggling with their weight, get them on a path where they're moving towards a healthier weight, they're going to see significant health benefits along the way.
And we should talk about, I just realized we've gotten into this program, we haven't defined, you know, if you're a parent and you're looking at your kid, you know, what defines what might be an unhealthy weight, Jeff?
Yeah, so we generally typically use a thing called BMI, or Body mm-hmm. Measurement Index, and that's, again, typically at your checkup visits with your child, with your provider, they can help show you the growth curves. I think that's one of the other challenges that we face is honestly, culturally now, we've almost accepted different norms. And so we see kids and say, oh, they're probably fine, where we know scientifically, if you look at, you know, normal, typical growth curves, they're already up above the curve. And so we typically will work with families and ask them to go back to their child provider, have them look at their growth curves and make sure that they're in the range that we would want them to be. And to Ron's point as well, even within the normal range, your son's mm-hmm. example or mine is a perfect example. You can be within the normal range, but that doesn't mean you're making the right health decisions. Mm-hmm. And so part of this is even for those that are in those categories, helping make better health choices.
Long-term. And is there a place where, I'm assuming, since a lot of the momentum behind this, the drive, is to educate people, is there a URL or a place that people can go to figure, get some suggestions for what might be healthy options, Ron?
You can go to our website at jumpinforhealthykids.org. And
feel
we're beginning
to give them that again.
Jumpinforhealthykids.org.
Okay.
And you'll be able to find information as we begin to build that out. I think Riley has some great resources online as well.
Yeah, so the Change the Play would be the one that we would, you know, highlight, iuhealth.org/change the play. And then IU Health, with its Garden on the Go program, delivering produce around Marion County and Central Indiana at very low costs. And you can get that at the IU Health website, Garden on the Go, as well. But I would emphasize the jump in. I think it's a great way for us to start to all work together on things instead of us individually trying to create our own solutions.
If you're a parent and you're looking for some menu ideas or activities or things like that, there's a great program called 5-2-1-0, and what it means is 5 servings of fruits and vegetables, 2 hours of screen time, no more, 1 hour of physical activity, and no sugar beverages. And great resources there from preschool all the way through high school.
Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. I'd like to thank all of you for coming in. I'd like to thank my guests, Ron Gifford, CEO of Jump In for Healthy Kids, Jeff Sparing, President and CEO of Riley Hospital for Children at Indiana University Health, and Dave Miner, the chair of the Indy Hunger Network. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.